we're going to go on ahead to our road to statewide paratransit eligibility. And we have Jillian Gillette, Division Chief Caltrans and Program Manager, Policy Analyst, and then she will be presenting this to us. Jillian, I think I heard you arrive.
I did. Thank you so much for this opportunity. So hello, I'm Jillian Gillette. I'm the Division Chief for the Division of Data and Digital Services at the State Department of Transportation, which is Caltrans. And I also run something called the California Integrated Mobility Program. And the mobility program's job is to remove barriers between different modes of transportation and within them, starting with transit, which has a bunch of issues. So my team of data scientists and software developers and data engineers have been, and business analysts have been looking at how we can standardize transit better so that the market is sustainable and can grow. Assembly Member Lackey in 2019 wrote a Assembly Bill 1531, I think. I have to look it up. That required the California State Department of, State Transit Administration, which sits on top of Caltrans, to do an assessment of paratransit, paratransit cross eligibility verification. And that legislation required an assessment and then required CalSTA to make recommendations. So we were here at Caltrans, were asked to do the assessment that Assembly Member Lackey requested. And that assessment was to find out of the paratransit and transit providers in the state of California, how they made known to visiting customers that they were eligible to also receive paratransit services in their service area. Because apparently a few people had been denied service. So they, in other words, they went to some part of California having been verified for eligibility for paratransit services in some other part of California, and they were denied service, which is illegal. So the assessment asked us to take a look into, like, how do you find out how to cross-verify? So the assessment methodology that we used was essentially to secret shopper all of the transit agencies. So the research was done during COVID. And so at the time, almost all of the customer service offices of the agencies were closed. And so the only way that you could communicate with a transit agency or paratransit provider was by phone or by website. So we looked at all, I can't remember the exact number, but we looked at over 250 services. There are close to 800 services in California. So we looked at over 250 services' websites and looked to answer basic questions. Could you, was there information on the website about how you could verify your eligibility if you were verified elsewhere? How easy was it to find that information? And then was that could you act on that information electronically, or what would you have to do? And then we followed up by also asking those questions via telephone of, I don't know, another 20 agencies. So the results are published on our website. I can put a link in the chat. The findings were pretty grim, frankly. The findings were that lots of the websites don't really work well at all. And it's very difficult to find information. On very few agencies can you find cross eligibility verification. And in fact, on most agencies' websites, it's actually pretty difficult to find information about how to verify yourself for, you know, if you're a resident in that service area. Generally, agencies, if they did have some kind of web presence, internet presence, would offer forms, PDF forms that you could, if you had a printer at home, you could download them and fill them out, but then you still had to bring them into the agency's office. Nobody had a fully online process. The data also showed that the Bay Area does this well. And you can see that there's a lot of cross eligibility in the Bay Area. And that's because the Metropolitan Transportation Commission in the Bay Area maintains a database that all the operators share. So if somebody presents their credential and asks for service coming from a different Bay Area agency, that responding agency just looks it up in the data, looks that person up in the database and verifies and then provides the service. But that's the only place in California where that exists. So we made a bunch of soft recommendations for CalSTA to consider in our assessment. And those were, first of all, you sort of in importance, first of all, that somebody, probably Caltrans, requested to create a statewide database a la what the MTC has created, in order to kind of give the tools for agencies to do this, at scale. The second recommendation was to make the information really clear on their websites, and to make the information sort of clear and consistent across all websites. So customers should basically be able to find the same tab on everybody's website and know that that's where they're going to find information about paratransit eligibility. A recommendation that the industry work towards, web forms and an automated process rather than requiring customers to print out PDFs and then bring them into offices. We forwarded the assessment to CalSTA. I don't believe that there was ever a report back to the legislature. So that's the most I can tell you about what happened with that. But I'm happy to share the assessment that we did and the underlying legislation. Let's see, what else? So that's some, documented data. What I can say is that Caltrans actually knows relatively little about straight up paratransit, because we operate a sort of complaint driven system. In other words, a service can apply to us, Caltrans, for funding for paratransit services, and we fund both agencies and nonprofits. But we don't have a comprehensive list of all of the service providers in the state of California. So we only know about you if you've applied. And there's a lot of volatility in this space, meaning a nonprofit, for instance, is generally the nonprofits, will apply 1 year and then not the next. There's a lot of turnover. The staffing at a lot of these agencies is so new and maybe doesn't have the capacity that, in fact, the Caltrans team that runs that program generally makes the application for you once they've confirmed that you're a legitimate applicant. So the upshot is that we really don't know all of the service providers in the state of California, and my team is embarking on research to discover that, so that we have a comprehensive list and then figure out a way to keep it current, because new services arrive or older ones die and they don't necessarily tell us. And we would need something like that in order to create a statewide database that everybody could use. Mm-hmm. Please, do you have a question?
No, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Then what else? The quality of the websites is a really big issue. The internet standards are, and mobile standards are some of the highest quality standards for the disability community. You know, the phone is a is the iPhone and the and Android devices are really a gift to all of us in so many ways. And internet protocols are like that too. So the fact that this industry is kind of homegrown and doesn't use the web is, in my opinion, really a basic problem here that we need to make sure that the transit agencies have high performing or sufficiently high performing websites. And the reason I say that is that the way that fixed route transit works in terms of discoverability is that if you are like most citizens of the world, you plan your trips using Google Maps or Apple Maps. And the reason that you can plan a transit trip, you know, a trip via transit on Google Maps is that fixed route agencies present their schedule and price information using a data standard. And if the agency properly does that, then Google and Apple just vacuum up that data, and that's what they use to help present it, build a transit trip option. And we spend a lot of time on my team getting all the California fixed route agencies to get religion about this mobility data standard, which is called GTFS, the General Transit Feed Specification. And so now with confidence, we can say that all of the fixed route service that's offered in California is visible on Google Maps. If there's a trip that you can't take on fixed route transit in California, it's because it doesn't exist, not because the agency hasn't gotten their stuff together in order to publish their data. However, that data standard only applies to, only applies to fixed route transit. That standard, however, is extensible, meaning you can add to it. And over time, it has been extended. So, for instance, originally, the General Transit Feed Specification didn't include the price of a trip, the fare. That was added subsequently. And there is a new extension to that to make sure that customers know whether they have to pay an exact change or whether they can pay by debit or credit card. And there's a proposed, I guess it's actually adopted now, extension of GTFS called GTFS Flex, F-L-E-X. And the point of Flex is for a demand-based service, such as paratransit. And what it does is it allows a customer who would like to plan a trip using, for instance, the wheelchair symbol, to the Google Maps will present the parts of your trip. For all the parts of your trip, they will it would present you the paratransit or and on-demand options for any given leg of a trip. However, it is adopted, but only because a very small trip planner agreed to put it on their trip planner. So the transit app is a very sort of industry-friendly darling app that allows you to plan trips. However, neither Google nor Apple voted to accept GTFS Flex because they have seen the websites of the paratransit providers. And the last thing that they want to do is use their global map product to send a customer who needs service a link to a website that doesn't work, because that makes everybody look bad. And so they voted against adopting the spec. And I understand why they did that. I wouldn't vote for it either, because my team and I have looked at the websites. We need these services to professionalize more in order to provide sort of the basics of service that are required. And so I'm going to stop there because that's sort of where my team and I come from, that we would very much like paratransit to be all that it can be. But in order to be anything that can be, it has to meet these basic minimums, which are you need to be discoverable on Google and Apple Maps, and you need to provide a kind of repeatable service that consumers expect and get on fixed route transit or get. Every stop sign in the United States looks the same way, right? those kinds of standards don't really exist in paratransit, but a basic one would be GTFS Flex and making sure that if Google or Apple identify your agency as a provider of a service in a specific area, that at least there's a phone call, a phone number to call that somebody's going to pick up, or that it, you know, lands at a website that gives the customer explicit directions about how to obtain that service.
Hey, thank you. That's a lot of information. I do want to let you know that we're not using the chat feature because a lot of people
don't
it. But
you can follow us an email.
Great. Yeah, we will make sure people get that. And do we have, I think we have time for one question in the email and one in the room. So let's take email first, Steve, if we have anything.
We don't have any on email at this point.
Okay, one in the room.
All right. We do have Frank, and you can unmute Frank.
Hello. My question is, did your report address the completely dysfunctional process that individuals have to do in order to set up their eligibility for an out-of-town provider? You know, you would think that these people, these agencies would know each other, would have lists of who the other agencies, so that you could just call your agency and say, "Hi, I'm traveling to Los Angeles next month. Can you arrange with me to get my eligibility over there?" And instead, what my person has to do is hunt up the agency for themselves, hunt up where at the agency processes eligibility, get a fax number from that agency to know where the eligibility material is going to be faxed to, then go to your agency, find out who it is at your agency who does the faxing of the eligibility material, call them, give them the fax number of the agency that you want to send the material to, pray that they actually send the fax over, and then you have to follow up a few days later with both agencies to make sure it was actually done. What kind of a system is that in the 21st century? And was that addressed in the report?
Yeah, so absolutely. What we tried to do without calling it dysfunctional was, you know, in our methodology, we assumed that the assumption of our methodology was that someone who is qualified, is eligible in one with one provider, should be able to discover their eligibility on another provider anywhere else in the state by going to their website and getting enough, being able to get concrete information about how to do it there at a minimum. And the agencies failed that, right? You cannot find the basic information that you need to even know if there's a fax to fax problem, or, you know, like you're asking sort of a more intermediate question, which is assuming that the customer can even find out if there is a process, then the process itself is dysfunctional, right? But we started with the most basic thing, which is, you know, I'm a customer of SACRT and I have a courtesy card with my face picture on it, right? And I want to go to Eureka, right? I'm going to look up Eureka's website, you know, assuming I can find it. Is there information on Eureka's website that tells me how to share my, you know, cross-verify my registration? And the answer is no, you can't even do that. So our report addressed sort of step A, and you're asking about sort of step D. And so no, it's yes, the existing process is very consistent with a lot of American processes, which put the onus of application on the customer and not on the provider, right? It's very common in the United States that benefits programs are hard to get because the benefitor, or sorry, the benefitee is expected to do all of the legwork, which I personally think is unfair to begin with. But that's how these processes are set up. They're not set up to be even consistent, let alone easy. And I agree, that's not the consumer's expectation. And, you know, never was, but it certainly isn't today. And we should fix it. But we at the state have no jurisdiction over local agencies. All of these decisions about how to implement these things is local. So unless you carry legislation that is very clear about the outcomes that are desired, it's not going to get any better.
Thank you. And we do have just a little tiny bit of legislation that we're trying to get through just on eligibility alone, just to make if you have a permanent or a stable disability that isn't expected to change, that you wouldn't have to keep redetermining your application since the application process is so onerous. So
that's right. So we, for fixed route, and we'd love to extend it to paratransit if the industry were ready. So what my team and I built is, you may know that under the Federal Transit Act, the FAST Act of 2015 or 14, transit agencies that are fixed route transit agencies that receive federal money are required to give discounts to certain people. So they're required to give discounts to seniors. They're required to give discounts to Medicare card holders, and they're required to give discounts to persons with disabilities. This is above and beyond paratransit, right? You are entitled to a discount on fixed route, right? Not every trip needs to have a paratransit vehicle. So you're entitled to a discount there. But the FTA, when it enacted this legislation, didn't give any of the transit agencies a way to do it, a method or a tool. And so currently, every transit agency in the country does its own, runs its own eligibility verification process. And since they're not experts in identity or privacy, they don't really know how to design these processes. And so what we found when we did our research is that many, many transit agencies are taking photocopies of the people's driver's licenses to prove their age or their disability status. And then they're making photocopies of the driver's licenses and storing those in their offices, which is a huge violation of privacy. And so what we did was we built a piece of software that agencies that work with us can deploy that allows a customer to verify certain aspects of their identity via login.gov, which is the federal government's single sign-on system, and then associate that eligibility with their debit or credit card. And then as long as that's the debit or credit card that they want to use, then anytime they tap, they always get their discounts automatically. And if the agency next door starts to work with us at the state, then their eligibility will just roll over. So they don't have to go agency by agency. And we would very much like to work towards, you know, a consistent application period, because that's another thing, you're right, that like some agencies will only let a senior verification for 1 year, you know, because I guess you're going to get younger next year, right?
Like, yeah, I wish. Right?
Yeah, me too. As a 64-year-old, you know, like I'm looking forward to getting my discount, but not so much. Let me give you one example. So in the case of seniors, because that's the easiest one to sort of solve technically, we researched about 200 agencies in California about how they did their senior verification that you are a senior. And none of them had the same method. This is how we found out that people were taking photocopies of driver's license, for instance. And there were, of the 171 agencies, I think we researched. Just within those 171, we found 18 different definitions of senior. So what that means in California, because everything is decided locally, is that if you want to take a longer trip, or a trip to a different part of the state that has different rules, you have no way of knowing what the price is, because your senior discount will actually cost you something different on this agency versus this agency, which is a big equity issue, right? People deserve to know what the price of their trip is going to be. But the agencies neither use the same standard, and many of them don't comply with the reporting standards. So the customer doesn't know. And this is unusual in transit. So in the state of California, the Department of Food and Agriculture regulates gas stations such that if you're a gas station in California, you must have a sign on the front of your gas station which tells the consumer exactly what flavors of gas you sell and what the price per gallon is. And that information has to match what's on the pump, A. And B, the letters on those signs can be no less than 6 inches tall. Because for cars and car trips and gas, we care that the consumer knows what the price is. And that's not true in transit, nor in paratransit. So I think we have a long way to go on a bunch of these issues, but you know, you really need to start with the basics. And I hope that the information that I shared about our study shows that the basics aren't complied with. So a lot of the things that we want to do that would be really great are just not possible. You know, we have to eat our peas and carrots before we can have dessert.
I agree. And we could keep you all afternoon, but we cannot. Thank
Thanks.
You, Killian.
Sure. Thank you for your time.
Yes.
Cheers.
And